Just quick overview, and Lou may already know this, but CHESLA is a quasi public entity created in 1982, and it's also a subsidiary of the Connecticut Health and Educational Facilities Authority. So CHEFA is the parent organization, so to speak. CHESLA became a subsidiary on July 1st, 2012. The governing board, which historically has been 9 members with a certain number of ex officios, including the state treasurer, secretary of OPM, and the president of CSCU. And then in the last legislative session, a 10th board member was added through another ex officio position, and that's the state's chief workforce officer. So if you're familiar with the governor's workforce council and a lot of the work that's being done there in terms of trying to encourage employment, that's the reason why the state's chief workforce officer was added to the CHESLA board, because CHESLA is viewed as being able to play a role in preparing the workforce. And then the advisory board, as you know, is all of you, and we are missing Matt Rosen, who is currently where, Josh?
I think he used to be at Naugatuck High School, and I think he's moving to Wilton High School for this school year.
So that's the high level overview.
Okay, so thank you, Jeanette. Moving on, we have 4 main products or programs. I'll first start with our financial literacy portal, which is called CT Dollars and Cents. That's CT Dollars and SENSE.com. It's a one-stop shop to help students and families plan, save, and pay for college. We then have a need-based scholarship program for Connecticut residents attending Connecticut institutions, and for students pursuing an undergraduate degree or a healthcare and manufacturing certificate program. We then have our in-school loan program, which is for students in or from the state of Connecticut with one low fixed rate. Currently that interest rate is 4.59% fixed. And new this year, there are no fees for the program. And then lastly, we have a refinance program, which is called Refi CT. This is for Connecticut residents that may not have heard about CHESLA while they were in college. They graduate, may have higher interest rate student loans through a Sallie Mae, et cetera. And you know, those young professionals better looking to finance their debt. So again, CT Dollars and Cents is our financial literacy portal. We launched this in 2017 in coordination with the Treasurer's Office, the Office of Higher Education, Department of Consumer Protection, and the Department of Banking. Again, it's a one-stop shop. There's articles, there's videos, there's games, there's calculators. One of my favorite tools that a student and family can play around with. Basically, if the student takes X amount in debt across his or her 4 years, the calculator will tell the student how much they will need to be making at their first job to be able to afford those monthly payments. So it's a nice way to prevent the students and families from overborrowing. Our need-based scholarship program. Again, 2 components for students pursuing an undergraduate degree, and also a component for students pursuing a healthcare or manufacturing certificate program. Historically, the scholarship program has dispersed $9.8 million, impacting over 5,300 students. The application for students pursuing an undergraduate degree, that opens March 1st annually. That application closes May 1st. We then have a scholarship committee that essentially grades the applications, and then we take the average of those grades and decide who we will be awarding the scholarships to. In terms of the need-based component, these students must have an EFC, an expected family contribution from the FAFSA of 6,000 or less. So we basically take the Pell Grant eligible EFC and round that up to 6,000. There's also a GPA component for the undergraduate program. I think it's a minimum GPA of 2.5.
Josh, this is Wilson. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
How did you come up with the 6,000 EFC? What was the rationale?
We just took the Pell Grant eligible EFC and rounded that up to the nearest whole number.
Okay.
And in terms of the scholarship awards, for the undergraduate degree side, the awards are $3,000 for a full-time student and $1,500 for a student attending on at least a half-time basis. Regarding the scholarships for those pursuing a healthcare or manufacturing certificate, that application opens July 1st each year, and that's a first-come, first-served basis application. So, you know, as long as funds are available, if a student applies, provides a letter of recommendation, and completes the application, then they would receive the award. The important point to note is there is no EFC component for the certificate scholarships. That had been a component in prior years, and the utilization of the certificate scholarships had been quite low. And, you know, non-credit certificate programs would qualify for the scholarship. And what we were finding is, you know, those non-credit certificate programs do not qualify for federal aid. So thus those students are typically not filling out a FAFSA. And when we were requiring the ESC component, we were requiring them to fill out a FAFSA. So it just seemed like an unnecessary barrier to a scholarship for a certificate program. So we removed that this year. And again, it's an open enrolling application. There's no deadline. As long as we have funds available, we will disperse and grant the award. The certificate scholarships are $1,250 per award. Any further questions on the scholarship program before I move on?
Yes, Josh, this is Wilson. Are undocumented students eligible to apply?
I believe so. Jeanette, do you remember? Jeanette, I think you're on mute.
Yeah, I think we're following all of our existing requirements with regard to citizenship, et cetera. Isn't mm-hmm. that what we're doing? The same as for loans.
So for the federal program, so yeah, then they would not be eligible, because I right. think we mirror our citizenship based off of the federal program.
But these are state dollars, correct?
So, these are not state.
Go ahead, Jeanette.
Go ahead, Josh.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to, these are not state dollars. These are dollars. The source of funding for this the scholarship program is from the Connecticut Student Loan Foundation, which is another CHEPA subsidiary that is basically in runoff. So it used to be the federal guarantor agency for right. the old model of federal loans. They have a loan portfolio and they have a debt portfolio. So they're in the process of just running the portfolio until they pay down the debt. To the extent they have some excess revenues, like $500,000 has been flowing annually to CHESLA. So the source of dollars for the scholarship program is really loan payments on that primarily federal loan portfolio that are revenues to CSLF and then transferred to CHESLA.
Uh, And then one other point I want to make is regarding the annual amount of scholarships. Typically at our January board meeting, Chesil Management will make a proposal to the board of directors. And typically we're allocating $500,000, so $500,000 for scholarships. And at that January board meeting, the board will approve an allocation of that $500,000 between the two scholarship programs. So I think this year, the allocation was $470,000 designated for those pursuing an undergraduate degree, and the remaining $30,000 for those pursuing a healthcare or manufacturing certificate. Again, the reason the certificate allocation is so small is because the historical utilization has been low. If for some reason we go through the $30,000 quite quickly this year, then in future years we can revisit the allocation. No more questions. Moving on to our in-school loan program. The loans are funded from tax-exempt bonds that are backed by the state of Connecticut. So essentially, we sell tax-exempt bonds on an annual basis based on the market conditions at the time, the cost of funds for the bond deal, et cetera. That's how we then set our interest rate for the upcoming academic year. As I touched on earlier, the current offering is 4.59% fixed. It's our lowest program rate in history by 26 basis points. And again, this is the first year we do not have fees. In prior years, we had a 3% origination fee, which, you know, if somebody had applied for, say, $10,000, the loan amount would have became $10,300 by tacking on that origination fee. And then we would have dispersed $10,000 to the school. And then historically, the in-school loan program has dispersed over $530 million. I would also like to point out, I think Jeanette touched on this earlier, but we can also give out loans for those pursuing a certificate program. And currently, those certificate programs have to be at a nonprofit college or university, a nonprofit or state college or university. You know, we've had inquiries over the years, you know, if somebody was taking a class at, you know, through say Hartford Hospital or Yale New Haven, and that would not qualify for a loan or scholarship right now because it's not offered through a higher education institution. Are there any questions on the in-school loan program? Okay. And then lastly, our refinance loan program, which is much smaller. This program launched at the end of June 2016. Again, it serves Connecticut residents or students from out of state coming in state to go to UConn, Southern, Central, et cetera. The refinance program built a little bit differently than the in-school program with the one rate. The refi program has a range of rates that are all fixed rates still, but they range from 4.75% to 5.99% based on the FICO score of the applicant and also the repayment term selected. So on the in-school loan program, our repayment term is 140 months, which is 11 and two-thirds years. So that's just one repayment term. Whereas on the refi side, we offer a more variety of options, a 5, 10, and 15-year repayment term. The other point to note is that our refinance program is immediate principal and interest. So we only refinance loans once a student's loans are in repayment. So essentially once they have graduated or left school. And essentially the reason for that is we do not want to refinance a student's loans while they're in school. They may have a full deferral or principal deferral, like our in-school program, and we don't want to refinance. And then it's like, oh, hey, now you owe principal and interest while you're in school. And again, the refi program is very small. It's been hit hard due to the COVID pandemic and the continual extension of federal loan benefits with the 0% and no required payments. You know, typically we're refinancing private loans, but also a high amount of federal loans, which are typically the parent plus loans. And, you know, with the federal benefits continuing to extend through January of 2022 now, the interest in refinancing just hasn't been there. But we do continue to market the refinancing of private lenders such as Sallie Mae, Discover, Wells Fargo, et cetera. And, you know, through June 30, the refi program had dispersed $12.5 million across 268 loans. Are there any further questions on the refinance program? Okay. And then something to also note, we do have an employer student loan repayment program, which I believe we partnered with RISLA probably about a year ago now. So this is offered jointly with our Rhode Island counterpart, which is RISLA. And as part of this employer student loan repayment program, CHESLA is offering all of our products and resources, so the four products and programs, and RISLA is handling the back office aspect for the employer to make contributions to their employee student loans. This is a growing benefit in the industry. There are a wide variety of statistics that show recent college graduates. That's one of the first benefits they're looking for from an employer is help paying down their student loans, because the quicker they can pay off their student loans, then maybe they can look towards actually buying a new car or purchasing a condo or house. So as part of this program, it really just takes the employer saying, hey, I want to offer this. There's an employer and employee portal, which makes it very simple. The employers just upload a roster of their employees that they want to make contributions to. And then RISLA handles all of that back office processing, which makes it easy for the employer because, as I'm sure you all know, there's a litany of loan servicers in the industry, and it can get confusing as to where all the monthly payments go. And it's also customized to meet any employer budget. So we're cognizant of COVID impacting, many employers out there. You know, an employer can make a one-time annual contribution for their employees, or, you know, they could do something on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis. So it's a benefit that can really fit into any employer budget. And then the last point I want to make is it's at very low cost to the employer. The only cost to the employer besides the actual contributions that they're making is $4 per transaction. So if an employer is making contributions to 10 employees each quarter, the cost on top of the actual amount of the contribution they're making would be $40 per quarter to handle the processing. Jeanette, is there anything else you wanted to add about that program or maybe about how we're trying to market it?
No, I think that covers it. We are, it's still a developing and evolving program. So if you have any, suggestions on employers we might want to get in touch with, let us know, and we will certainly follow up with them.
Okay. So that's the end of the PowerPoint here. I think next on the agenda is our strategic plan. So just give me a second to bring that up here. Can you see that?
Okay. Yes. Okay. So thanks, Josh. And there are just a couple of things that I wanted to touch on to make sure you're aware of what Chesla is going to be focusing on over these next 3 years. And so we went through a pretty well-structured strategic planning process. It was done jointly. It was the CHIFA board and the Chesla board participated in the process, and the CHIFA staff and the Chesla staff participated as a group in the process. So, Josh, if you can just go to the vision statement for Chesla, the mission vision. So, one more, yeah. So we already saw the Chesla mission. The vision is also described here. And again, it's referencing post-secondary education rather than just higher ed, keying in on the state's workforce needs, enhancing economic development, and trying to develop some innovative post-secondary education programs. So that's what we're kind of trying to get to. And I think if you can, so we have five strategic pillars, and I think the next, there's a page that shows them all on one page, mm-hmm. I believe. Next page, Josh. Yeah, so these are the strategic pillars that apply to both CHIFA and Chesla. So it's collaboration, economic and workforce development for the public good, which is really where a lot of Chesla's initiatives fall within pillar two and also pillar one, technology, innovation, and public engagement and accountability, which also encompasses our marketing and outreach programs. So just to give you a sense of some of the specific initiatives that Chesla will be focusing on, I think if you can go to slide 13, I think it is, Josh. So here, this relates to the initiatives. The first initiative, which is to collaborate with state and other quasi-public agencies and other stakeholders. And so the first item number one really pertains to CHIFA, but item two is Chesla focused, and it's to develop targeted student loan refinance or other education finance products that will serve students and help address the state's workforce needs. So one of the things we're going to be, Dan Junji, our legislative liaison, will be speaking to later is we did successfully pass, and it's now a law, creating the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program, which we think will be a critical teacher recruitment tool for teachers in Alliance districts, particularly teachers of color. And the other thing that actually got some traction in the legislative session through the governor's office is some certificate program financing options, which Dan can also touch on. And then the last item there is something we wanted to get your thoughts on in a few moments, and that's the feasibility of using loan rate discounts to encourage financial literacy. So those are some of the key aspects of the first initiative that relate to Chesla. And then if you go to the next slide, Josh. And then this is just, of course, we're always participating in outside groups as needed. The Education Finance Council, EFC, there at the end is one of Chesla's key groups, along with CAPFA that you see there. And then it also references the Governor's Workforce Council and the Office of Workforce Strategy. And then along with the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program, we are working very closely with the State Department of Education And we actually have a meeting with them later today regarding implementation of that law. And then lastly, I wanted to touch on page 17, slide 17, Josh. And so this is our third initiative, broadening, assessing, and communicating CHESLA's impact on post-secondary education. And so one of the things that we are hoping to be able to achieve this fiscal year is to have an outside study done to try to assess and quantify CHESLA's workforce impact. And I've made some initial contacts to Advanced CT, which used to be called, I think it was CERC, the I think it's the Connecticut Economic and Research Council, Economic Research Council, have got renamed Advanced CT, and they work kind of hand in hand with the Department of Economic and Community Development. They have a research, some research staff, and we're hoping they can help us assess CHESLA's impact on workforce in terms of how much our programs help educate the workforce that's needed to meet the demands of employers here in Connecticut. Also, we'll be working again with the Department of Education on publicizing the Alliance District Loan Subsidy Program. Obviously, it's only going to be successful as a recruitment tool if people know about it, new potential teachers know about it, and of course, we generally want the legislature and Connecticut residents in general to be aware of the role that CHESLA's playing. And then lastly, as I've already referenced, working with the Governor's Workforce Council and the Office of Workforce Strategy, I think the fact that it was the Governor's office that decided to make the Chief Workforce Officer a member of the CHESLA board really speaks to the Governor's office recognition of the role that CHESLA can play. And we do want to, as we move forward with that, consider the use of other types of financing products and whether or not CHESLA can play a role there. So income share agreements could be one thing. Philanthropically funded, potentially, or employer funded, a zero interest loan program could be another way of creating a variation on income share agreements. So we're looking at that model as well. And one of the things, another helpful thing that came out of the last legislative session is that CHESLA's definition of education finance was expanded. It used to be strictly education finance was defined as offering grants or loans, but the definition has been broadened to just generally be anything else that the CHESLA board considers education finance. So that's what gives us the ability to explore some other types of products. And so that's those are sort of the highlights relative to CHESLA on the strategic plan and our initiatives for the next 3 years. So are there any questions on that? Okay. All right. And I think, is Dan next, Josh, in the agenda?
Yeah, I'll just switch it to the agenda because I don't think we have any more slides. So we'll turn it over to Dan to kind of cover our legislative update.
Right, and maybe you could even take down your screen share at this point, Josh.
Okay.
Great, thank you. So I'm just going to touch on a handful of items that Jeanette also touched on as she reviewed the strategic plan. But the first two items that I'd like to touch on involve the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program, as well as additional language that Chesla was successful in getting passed that expands the definition of education assistance as outlined in the enabling statutes so that we can provide assistance beyond just loans and scholarships. Just to provide a little bit of background, there were initially two legislative proposals that were introduced in the Higher Education Committee. And one of those proposals was to establish the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program. And the second proposal contained a number of technical changes, including the language change that expands the definition of education assistance in Chesla's enabling statutes. We were successful in having both of those bills voted out of the Higher Education Committee. They were voted out of committee with strong bipartisan support. However, after they were voted out of the Higher Education Committee, they were then referred to the Finance Committee, where unfortunately the committee failed to take action on our legislation prior to their statutory deadline for adjournment. And our two pieces of legislation effectively died in the Finance Committee. However, we were successful in working with Jason Doucette. He is the House representative and co-chair of the Banking Committee. And we were able to work with him to have an amendment filed on a pre-existing Banking Committee bill. And that amendment contained a handful of items relevant for Chesla. The first being the language that establishes the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program. It also included language that expands the definition of education assistance as outlined in Chesla's enabling statutes. But the third component that the amendment contained was language requiring Chesla to conduct a study and also participate in a working group focused on examining the feasibility of expanding access to Chesla's products. So we're working closely with Jason Doucette, again, the co-chair of the Banking Committee. It's our understanding that Chesla will likely be serving as one of the co-chairs in conjunction with Representative Doucette of the working group. And we anticipate that that working group will likely convene for its first meeting within the next month or so. With respect to this legislation, in addition to successfully passing it through both chambers, it was also signed by the governor, and we were able to organize a successful press event and ceremonial bill signing with the governor, as well as the newly appointed commissioner of the State Department of Education. The last item that I quickly wanted to touch on was legislation with respect to Chesla and our ability to create loans for high value certificate programs. This is part of the governor's workforce development plan. During a special session, which was convened about a week after the ordinary session adjourned, the legislature returned to pass an implementer bill. And that implementer bill included language that would enable Chesla to provide financial assistance for what the legislation refers to as high value certificate programs. And these are programs that are reviewed and determined by the chief workforce officer on an individual basis. And so we're going to continue to stay involved on these issues, and we're happy to keep you apprised of any developments that take place moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. And just to clarify a bit further with regard to the high value certificates, that would include potentially certificates from for-profit programs like coding boot camps, for example. So as Josh was mentioning earlier, our current our historical constraint has been we could only do certificate programs that were offered by an accredited nonprofit or state school. Now we will, once this program gets implemented and funded, we would be able to offer some sort of assistance to programs offered by other types of providers that would be vetted through the governor's workforce, the Office of Workforce Strategy. So that's, you know, a significant change. It, at this point, the law did pass, but it's not fully operationalized in terms of with some funding support that the state was going to provide. And then I just also wanted to mention the general concept of the Alliance Teacher Loan Subsidy is that there's a subsidized loan rate for teachers who commit to working in Alliance school districts for the life of the loan. So that's the incentive. And Josh, did you want to add any further details on that?
Not really. I mean, but you did touch on it. It would apply to a borrower that already has CHESL loans. So they took out loans while they were in school. And also to those teachers that may have Sallie Mae loans or another private lender, they could refinance with our Refi CT program. And then if they're teaching in an Alliance district, then receive that subsidy on top of it. So, you know, somebody that refinanced could have a 12% rate, refinance it down to say 5%. And then, you know, the exact subsidy has yet to be finalized, but if the Alliance District subsidy was, you know, say 3%, well, now they brought their 12% loan all the way down to 2% as long as they're continuing to teach in an Alliance District. So to that end, you know, we think it's a great marketing tool for the state to bring in new teachers and teachers of color in those Alliance districts.
Right. And we're also looking at ways to, from an underwriting guideline perspective, if we can sort of calculate the debt to income ratio based on the reduced loan rate rather than the, you know, officially stated loan rate, we think that will also enhance access to the program. So we want to make sure that, you know, a teacher's salary, you know, someone on a teacher's entry level teacher salary can still qualify for this program. So it was a very exciting legislative session, and we're pleased with the way things turned out for CHESL. And so thanks, Dan. And then I think the last item where we were hoping to get some feedback, Josh, do you want to go into that?
Yeah, so the last item on our agenda is this financial literacy discount concept. And, you know, I kind of came up with this because, you know, as I touched on earlier, we do have the financial literacy portal, CT Dollars and Cents. You know, if people call our office and ask questions about financing higher education, obviously we answer those questions. But I really think we can do more beyond just trying to drive traffic to our financial literacy portal. So that's where the idea came from. And part of our, or the majority of our financial literacy portal is powered by iGrad, who's a leading financial literacy provider in the industry. And as part of their platform, there are courses that can be completed. And this is where my idea comes in. Can we tie some of these courses, such as, you know, there's repaying your student loans, creating a budget, borrowing smart and preparing for higher education, understanding credit reports. Can we tie a successful completion of these courses to then an interest rate discount on our CHESL loans? You know, maybe that's 25 basis points, a quarter percent. But that's just kind of where my thought was. I didn't know if, you know, anyone on our advisory board has any thoughts to that. But again, I'm really just thinking of ways we can try to do more than just trying to drive traffic to our financial literacy portal, trying to tie a tangible benefit that the student can experience by furthering their financial literacy knowledge. And you know, going off of that, you know, Lou knows we're on the board for Connecticut Jumpstart, which is an organization heavily involved with financial literacy across the state. And, you know, at least from my understanding, a financial literacy class is still not a high school graduation requirement. So you then have these high school students whose parents may or may not have any, you know, paying for college background. So these students don't have financial literacy knowledge. And then the higher education industry is asking these students to make significant life-changing decisions based on, you know, borrowing for college and, you know, how much do they take out, et cetera. So that's kind of like the short of it. Does, you know, anyone have on the advisory board have any comments or thoughts on that? Mm-hmm.
Josh, this is Wilson. Apparently this is targeted at the student population, but have you given any thought as to how do we incorporate parents? Because generally they're the drivers to what some students do or don't do. So is there room for parent participation, I guess is put out?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a good point. I was initially thinking of this more at the student level. I mean, I've gone through a few of these iGrad courses myself. I think they're applicable to both students and parents, especially if the parents do not have that prior knowledge. So I think it could work both ways. You know, a student could complete it with their parent right there. So they both gain that knowledge, but that is a good point to consider.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Wilson. Wu, did you have any thoughts?
Yeah, a few. So I'll give you an example. I was presenting to one of our sports teams that came in for preseason last week.
Yeah.
And so I was doing my financial literacy presentation that I do in the classroom. And I always ask my students, I said, did any of you take, you know, financial literacy in high school? And the reality, and two of them did. So two out of 20 or so did. And they're both Connecticut residents. So I said to them, I said, so tell me, what did you learn in the class? And they both kind of looked at me and I was like, and they didn't respond. So I said, okay, so when did you take the class? Well, I took it my freshman year in high school. Didn't remember a thing. Another one took a junior year in high school. And all she remembered was they talked about stocks. That's what she said. So the challenge in it that we face, and you guys all know this, is for the most part, students aren't paying for college, okay? They might, maybe if they're working and putting themselves to school at a community college, but very few students, traditional age students, are actually paying for their four-year degree, okay? They may have financial aid covering some. So the challenge that I've faced forever, and I haven't seen it really change, is especially when it comes to loans, students don't understand them. They understand the fact that, okay, this is a means to help pay for college now. They don't understand mm-hmm. loan repayment, no matter how many times I try to explain it and walk them through it. So it's a constant education in terms of, you know, where they are in their financial lives. Paying for college, financial literacy. What do they care about? They tend not to care about investing. They tend not to care about loans. They care about credit. They don't care about budgeting, you know, things of that nature. So it's challenging. I think these courses are great. You know, I've communicated with iGrad and some of the competitors, and my institution will not pay $20,000 or a year, you know, to have these companies come in and create said courses. You know, because they're like, that's Lou, that's your job. I'm doing those, you know, that education with students at this point, you know? So I think it's a good idea as a benefit or a means to not only educate students and parents, you know, and, you know, to tying the course completion, assuming the validity of those courses and whatnot, you know, to a benefit. Yeah, it sounds like a great concept.
Yeah, and thanks, Lou. And going off of that, you know, the other reason I kind of came up with this idea too was, you know, going back to the federal COVID benefits and payment suspension. I began to realize how many borrowers in the Chesil portfolio did not understand the basic concept of whether their loan was a federal loan or even though Chesil's quasi-state, were considered to be a private loan. So there were many students and their families that saw on TV that, you know, federal loans do not require payments for, you know, until this day. And even though they were receiving monthly bills from the loan servicer, just simply decided, oh, I'm not going to make payments on my Chesil loan because I saw on TV that, you know, no student loan payments are required. So I think that goes back to your point. You know, they don't really know. They don't know what type of student loan they have and don't necessarily understand student loan repayment as a whole. And, you know, going off of that, even when I talk to parents, you know, hey, you know, we want to take out $30,000 a year for our daughter. Okay, great. But do you realize, and this sounds silly, right? But do you realize you'll have to pay back $120,000 plus interest? And, you know, I think sometimes the families get in the year to year. Okay, we just need to take out a $30,000 loan this year. Daughter's all set this year, then another $30,000 next year. And they don't really think of the complete picture of, okay, you know, now it's kind of eye-popping. That's $120,000 plus interest when the student graduates. You know, I think that makes them think a little bit more than the year-to-year basis.
Right, Josh. Mm-hmm. And what happens too, especially with a co-signed private loan, is probably 9 out of 10 parents at least think that, well, I'm going to co-sign for my daughter, but when she graduates, it's her debt and she's going to pay it off. Well, she's going to have $27,000 of federal student loans plus this 120. No way. She's going to pay off her federal loan. She can afford 300 a month there. But if we're talking, you know, this example, 120,000, I don't care what kind of work she's doing. She's not going to have that funding to be able to do that. So I think a lot of parents, they poo-poo the parent loan because, oh, that's my debt. And I don't want to take that on for her education, but I'll co-sign a private student loan with her. And they assume that it's the student's debt, when in reality, you know, any co-signed loan, right? It's the co-signer as well. So I just think it's, you know, it, I don't know if it's just living in denial, you know, if it's, you know, thinking of the future, you know, it's a mortgage, you know, for some families, and parents that have them get that, you know, whereas students, again, they can't. Someone told me once, I don't know if it's the prefrontal cortex of the brain, but our traditional age students don't have that futuristic. They can't understand what the future means for loan debt, repayment, things of that nature until they turn like 20 something or so. So they're taking on this debt and grandma might be co-signing or dad might be co-signing, you know, and then they hit reality, graduation, and they're working hopefully. And then repayment comes from a federal side. That's normally manageable. 27,000 is manageable. But when you've got, you know, 30,000 plus more, you know, co-signed, or mom's got the parent loan and she expects the daughter to pay it off. Again, I just think it's, they're not doing the math, or they don't care to do the math, or they just don't know.
And Josh, to Luth's point, I mean, students live in the moment, so they're not concerned about 4 years from now. And it's no wonder that they're brought up the issue of credit, because it's something that they need right away, something that they need a credit card to purchase things to satisfy their needs. So, you know, that need for this information, that need to really figure out how do we pay this loan, is comes when they get that first notice. Guess what? You have this monthly payment you have to make. So I think that we have to hit them in the front end, but also in the back end too, because that's when they're going to want the information, first of all, and one that they probably will really be more receptive to it. That's kind of thing. So,
So that's an interesting point of, I think what you're saying is maybe have some component that comes as they're about to enter repayment. Is that what you're saying? In addition to when they apply or something?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, Josh, do colleges still do the exit loan interviews that they were supposed to be doing? I know when I was back in higher ed, that was one of the things that every year we had to conduct that exit loan interview.
Yeah, Wu's nodding his head. I believe that's still required.
Yeah,
that's still required.
It's a federal requirement, but just like entrance counseling, students can kind of sleep through it or have someone do it for them. So,
oh, okay.
What they're truly learning, I don't think it's what the government probably intended. Rich could probably speak to it better from a financial aid perspective.
I mean, go ahead, Rich.
It's really sad because the students don't realize, as I said, up front, how much money they're really going to borrow for 4 years. And at the end, when they graduate, they just look at it and think, oh, okay, it's not real to them. They really do not understand until you really break it down and say, you're going to earn $25,000 a year, and half is going to go, part of it's going to go to taxes, your rent, your car, and you get nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to hear it. Yeah, I hate to be brutal to them, but you have to be.
Right. Yeah, and I can just speak from personal experience when I graduated and went through the exit counseling at Marist. It's kind of like Lou said, you know, it didn't mean much to me at the time. It was just kind of in one ear and out the other. And hey, I need to sit through this to actually graduate. So I'm going to do that, but it wasn't really sinking in.
Yep.
And so were you going to say something, Rich?
I was going to say it straight. I mean, it'd be nice to really be able to really have the student understand up front how much they're borrowing, but also in the end to realize what has really happened and what their future is going to be, how long it's going to be.
Right.
I mean, my future son-in-law, he borrowed $60,000-$70,000 and all of a sudden realizes, wait a second, I got to pay this back. It's like, yep. You know, and don't give it to me.
Right. Become a joint debt now, right? But Josh is continuing to work with iGrad so that, you know, there are some opportunities for some customization and how we'll get this implemented on the website and roll it out so that people are aware of it. So there's still some lead time associated with that, right, Josh?
Yeah, I don't really have a time frame in mind at this point, but we'll certainly keep you all posted. And, you know, it would start with, you know, first making a proposal to our board that they would approve this concept. So, you know, I would say maybe at the, say, November or January meeting, maybe we're making a proposal to the board regarding this overall concept, and then once it's approved, we would be working on the implementation steps.
Right.
One thought too, Josh, with that is one of the things that I've learned with financial literacy is it's not a sexy topic, it's not an exciting topic. It really needs to be ingrained, you know, more than once. So if it comes to the point where the portal and the course completion, you know, I'd say make it an annual thing. You know, the government has this new thing with student loans. So every year they're supposed to go in and like recertify, they know what their loan debt is to date, which I think is a good thing. You know, doing it one time, just like exit and entrance and exit counseling, I don't think is really effective. It's, you know, repeating it, you know, even if I did it and I passed it this year, well, maybe a condition to get the benefit is I need to do it every year, you know, during my undergraduate years, because even then they're going to forget stuff, you know. And like I said, for me, it's, you know, I keep drilling in the same concepts, you know, year after year with students. Hopefully at some point they're going to pick it up, learn it and run with it. But that might be a condition of, it's not a one-time take the course on credit and you're done, because no one gets it that fast, you know. But if it can be, I don't know if it's the same credit course or they're more detailed courses, but I would say keep them going throughout their undergrad years, not a one and done, because I don't think that works for knowledge gaining.
Yeah, I think to Lou's point, maybe if we develop a curriculum that builds on from year to year, to the point where on the fourth year, when they're about to graduate, that's where you're going to hit them. Well, you have this debt. This is the interest rate. This is your income, that kind of thing. And I think he's right. I think that it really, you know, will hit home much faster.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. And it kind of like an ACH discount where they enroll in the ACH, they receive the discount, but then if some reason they had to break the auto pay, or, you know, they did not do their annual courses, then the interest rate just goes back up.
There's a way.
Rate that was on their promissory note.
Right. So yeah, I think that's some great feedback and definitely appreciate it. And as Josh said, as we go along, we'll continue to keep you posted. Otherwise, just to wrap up, since we're at the hour mark, the annual meeting of the board is on September 20th. So so that notice will be going out, what, in like a week or so, Josh? A couple weeks.
Well, the board package would go out like September 13th or 14th, and I always include the advisory board. Right. And so you're all welcome to attend at your convenience.
Right, and I think that's 11:30 on September 20th, I believe. And the auditors will be doing, you know, it's also when the audited financial statements are presented, so the auditors will be doing that presentation as part of the meeting.
So, Jeanette, are we expected to attend this meeting?
You know, you're invited to attend, and so certainly if you're able and willing, that would be great. If you can't make it, then that's also okay as well.
Okay.
So I think that covers everything we wanted to talk about this morning, right, Josh?
Yeah, I think we're all set. I appreciate the feedback from everyone.
Yes.
Okay.
And so thanks very much. And enjoy what's left of summer. And maybe we'll see you on September 20th.
Josh, quick piece. Are you going to do these FAFSA checklist updates for this year's FAFSA? You guys have done it in the past.
Yeah, I'll work with my team and then I'll get it over to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you all.